Hi, everyone. Josh Nason here. Josh Nason's Punch-Out, WrestlingObserver.com, speaking in fragment sentences again. Hope you guys are doing well. It is Wednesday, January 31st, as you're listening to this. Perfect time to run a Best of 2017 finale show. One of these years, I swear to God, I will get these done like within the first week of January. But regardless, we're here. And this was a really fun show that you're about to listen to, recorded on Tuesday night. Recorded with Nathan McCarter of Bleacher Report. He is someone I hooked up with here through the Mixed Martial Arts Journalists Association, making best friends 24/7. Nathan McCarter for Bleacher Report MMA. He and I talked for 90 minutes about the fourth quarter of 2017, October, November, December. All kinds of stuff happened. GSP return. Really, that whole event. GSP returning, Rose winning, Nama Yunus winning, and TJ Dillashaw defeating his rival Cody Garbrandt. We had that show in Detroit punctuated by the killer knockout by Francis Ngannou over Alistair Overeem, that Eddie Alvarez Justin Gaethje fight. We had the main event Max Holloway defeating Jose Aldo, and as well as all types of other news and all kinds of fun stuff that happened throughout the month. So I know we're in 2018. I know we've had at least 28 UFC shows already this month, but you know this is a fun show. Trust me. So we talk actually a little bit about Ronda Rousey at the beginning, and we get right into it. So I'm going to get out of the way, and I'm going to have you listen to yours truly and Nathan McCarter finishing up our look back at 2017 in the world of MMA. Enjoy. You know, it's 2018, but we are still going to finish up 2017, a little bit unfinished business here, October, November, and December, closing up Q4, and with that, we join a first-time guest of the show. Pretty excited for this. We met, I feel like Match.com, we met the MMAJA, the Mixed Martial Arts Journalists Association, the union association, so to speak, and happy to talk to him tonight. Nathan McCarter joining us for the first time from Bleacher Report, their very fine site. And Nathan, we'll start you out with the really tough questions, you know, being a first-time guest. What's your predictions for the Super Bowl?
I'll take the Eagles. They have more Florida State Seminoles on the defense, so I'll go Eagles.
The Eagles, okay. Well, being about an hour outside away from Boston, I think I'll take the Patriots. So that'll be good. It's a good way to start things off. We're already at odds. We're off and running already. So for those people that have not that familiar with your work yet, or may have seen your name here or there, and so on, give us a little bit of background as far as how you first got started writing about MMA and what you're currently doing for Bleacher Report.
Yeah, no problem. In 2010, I was an undergraduate intern in San Francisco, and Strikeforce came down with Fedor, and I decided to reach out to a friend, Ann Gaffigan, who was at the time the head of WomenTalkSports.com, and of course Cyborg was on that card. So we talked for me to do a freelance piece for her, and that was the first ever event I ever covered. From there, just kind of progressed. In 2012, I joined Bleacher Report as a featured columnist and kind of snowballed from just doing a few pieces here and there to joining them. And this will be year number six.
Wow. Interesting stuff. So what did you write about before? I believe football is in your background, correct?
Yeah, I've written for football.com, covered Big Ten football. My time there, I've covered professional wrestling, women's soccer, kind of the whole gamut.
Yeah, professional wrestling. All right. Well, being this is on WrestlingObserver.com, definitely of interest to our audience there. So let me ask you, before we go back to the past, let's talk about what happened just a couple of days ago with former UFC superstar Ronda Rousey making her WWE return. I can't say debut because people know obviously she was at WrestleMania a couple of years ago in a little segment with The Rock and Triple H and Stephanie. What'd you think about what happened on Sunday night and her prospects for the future?
You know, to anyone that listened to Dave on the MMA Hour on Monday, I agree. I'm in lockstep with him and Ariel Helwani. It was, you know, it's a great moment for her, but it looked like she was playing a role. Nothing looked authentic about it. The way she even stepped back to point at the sign was very forced. It caused me to have a lot of concern about where this is going to go. you know, if this was just a one-off, I wouldn't have much of a concern. But, you know, she says it's full-time, which we don't really know what that means. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is going to be on WrestleMania. It has me concerned because, as we know, the wrestling fans, they won't have any trouble turning and turning quickly if she is not up to par. So the WWE's definitely got to protect her, at least for the foreseeable near future.
Yeah, I didn't love the smiling. I thought it was just it felt a little off character. She definitely seemed kind of happy to be there, which, you know, she's a human being, so I guess there is something to that. But you're also, you know, there also is this thing about this is your first kind of appearance in front of these people in a long time. This is kind of the next chapter of this. And yeah, just the point of the sign felt a little awkward. It just came off as a little bit of clunky at times. The placement in the ring, like she really wasn't kind of looking at the camera side. And, you know, it seems like a little bit of nitpicking. This is also a star you're paying a lot of money to coming in here. And just there's something about it just it seemed off for whatever reason. And, you know, who knows? Down the road, this thing could completely work. But, you know, again, we don't really know what full time means. I doubt she's doing, you know, house show loops and things like that. So is she going to work the Lesnar schedule? You know, that seems to be what people seem to think. Yeah, go ahead.
And that's a very interesting position the WWE in, because as we know, you only get better by doing. But she can't do the house shows because then she loses that special ability. Right. So they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place in that regard to her. You know, luckily they do have the performance center. She can get work there, but, you know, she's not going to be in front of a live crowd every day. So that's a very interesting dynamic that they're going to have to deal with.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that unfolds here. And we really don't know when the next time is we're going to see her. Probably, my guess is Elimination Chamber, or maybe the day after in some sort of just kind of setup role for Mania. I don't see, you know, again, I don't see her being a regular character. And I think we're in this this kind of economy with when stars now are like McGregor and like we're going to talk about tonight with GSP and other people, that the less you see them and the less they compete, it's almost like bigger, you know, more special. And, you know, Brock Lesnar has owned that in the wrestling space forever, and obviously in combat sports as well. But, you know, I less is going to be more with her. And I think, I think if they're smart, they're going to use her sparingly and not just be one of the guys or one of the girls, so to speak. And you've already seen, which is interesting, you've already seen this in the past couple of days, there's a little bit of resentment from some of the women, not really necessarily the active roster, but like, you know, Nikki Bella, not really that happy, being pretty vocal on Twitter last night, and also Alundra Blaze. And, you know, it's kind of interesting now that, you know, they want the attention placed on the women that have been there. And this is always kind of the great debate. And this is something back in the day with, you know, CM Punk or anyone else. It was certain talents when they went to UFC or potential coming back, what have you, is that so many people were focused on, you know, like, what about the current group that's come up, and everyone's focused on this superstar coming in. But often the superstar coming in from the outside is what brings in all these other eyeballs and all these other dollars, and kind of helps, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats. So it's interesting. She's already getting, you know, 2 days in, she's already getting a little bit of pushback from some of the veterans.
And hopefully that works with how she was. And, you know, she wasn't playing a character when she was in the UFC, but she was very divisive, had a lot of fans, a lot of haters. But she was just so charismatic in that role where she was so stern and, you know, type A personality. If she can bring that to WWE, it'll be A+ the entire way.
Yep, I would agree. I would agree. So we'll see how that unfolds. So let's go back to October. So for those that have not heard this series before, and at this point, if you're listening to this, I'm surprised if you haven't, but this is what we do. So we go through, I go through the Bloody Elbow archives, because they have it really laid out very nicely month by month. So I go through and kind of pick out what I think are the big stories, the interesting, you know, news bits, fights that are made, event results, all that type of stuff, and kind of compile them. Then I break them out with some of the ones that really kind of rose to the top. And so we'll start in October. Really kind of no specific order, but really to me this was kind of the biggest story of October, which wasn't really a star making month or a major month. November is insane, and I can't wait to get to that. But October, really kind of the big story of that month was UFC 216. This was the Demetrius Johnson retaining his flyweight title for a record 11th straight defense, and this was that was obviously big. The submission and how he did it, which for pro wrestling fans must have made them smile. I know it made me smile. It was just an amazing, basically a belly to back suplex into a an armbar, just amazing submission that you probably do it 9 times out of 10 and mess it up, and he pulled it off flawlessly for the submission. It was great, and obviously his breaking Anderson Silva's record the way he did that was tremendous, and also Tony Ferguson submitting Kevin Lee to win the interim lightweight title. Lee almost not making weight. There's this whole story about the staph infection, and we'll talk a little bit about that afterward, but. UFC 216, not a huge box office draw, but kind of when you look back on it, this was it was notable for a lot of reasons. Obviously, the Demetrius Johnson win and how he did it, and arguably the submission of the year, but also Tony Ferguson kind of setting himself up for some potentially interesting fights down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for UFC 216, Demetrius Johnson was the story. For me, I already had him being the best fighter in the world going into that. After that performance, I think he is the best to ever do it. To break a record with that submission, that was everything. That was the I Ching. That was he's amazing. He's, in my opinion, the best to ever do it. And obviously, he's still active, and hopefully we can see some bigger fights for him and a bigger platform to shine. But he's the best to ever do it.
So to you, the best fighter of all time.
Absolutely, hands down. I mean, if you break it down, because a lot of people pound for pound, they just go for who's the best or who's the most dominant.
Yeah.
But if you break down everything, striking, and we'll take John Jones for example, his striking is good. It's not world class. There's a lot of technical deficiencies there. Demetrius Johnson, I wouldn't say he's world class, but he's certainly better than John Jones from a technical perspective. You go to wrestling. Off the charts, the way he's able to change levels and shoot in, time everyone strikes. His jujitsu's phenomenal. We've seen, last second submissions, against Kyoji Horiguchi. This, I guess it's not the mousetrap, but that's what everyone was calling it after 216.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just the complete fighter. There's never been a complete fighter. Everyone said Anderson Silva's the greatest of all time, and he obviously black belt jujitsu. Phenomenal Muay Thai striker, didn't have the wrestling. Demetrius Johnson, the best all-around fighter we have ever seen perform inside the octagon.
Interesting. Yeah, it's a good debate, and it's a very interesting debate. You can go a lot of different directions, especially I think when guys fought, I think is now important, because I was talking about this with a friend the other day, that the fighters right now, and this has been a notion kind of brought before, is not exactly original, but the fighters that are opening up shows today in front of 1,000 people in the stands could probably be champions 10 years ago, just because the skill level has just come up so far.
Absolutely.
You look at these guys like Demetrius Johnson and John Jones, but there's always the asterisks with his USADA violations. There's Daniel Cormier. There's all these different fighters now. Obviously, GSP, Anderson Silva, you can't forget against those guys. CM Punk, obviously one of the greatest of all time. So, there's a good list there. But, Demetrius Johnson definitely, adding to his legacy, and we'll see if this this Dillashaw fight happens. But, yeah, DJ, I mean, this the way he submitted him, and, this was really a big year for him in a lot of ways. He was my my fighter of the year, not just for how what he did in the cage, but that he began to kind of really come full circle with his personality outside of it. And I mentioned this on the last show with the summer, with him and going after Dana White and basically being honest, or what we believe to be honest, about his contract situation with the money, with the fact that the flyweight division, according to him via Dana, almost threatened to pull it if he didn't do the TJ Dillashaw fight and standing up for his principles. He wasn't scared, that really stood out to me as, okay, he's not, there's a company guy, and then there's guys like, look, you're going to respect me. And this guy's been, basically shit on for a long time for not being able to draw, not doing this. And a lot of that's not really his fault. It's just the way of the world.
And it's very strange because he's been sponsored by Microsoft, for Xbox, and his Twitch streams do excellent numbers. So I think there's a niche that the UFC, for whatever reason, either doesn't understand how to exploit, or they just don't care about that niche. but he has something. It's, you know, it's not the Brock Lesnar, Ronda Rousey star power, but he has his own niche where the UFC has really dropped the ball in promoting him.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the drop in sponsorship with Microsoft was just really stupid, really, really dumb and short-sighted of them. But, you know, that seems to happen a lot with them. Yeah, again, Tony Ferguson submitting Kevin Lee and looking great in doing that. And also in this card, Derek Lewis hurting his back. He was out of this Fabricio Werdum fight. Just was kind of last second replacement. Really, this was all about Demetrius Johnson. And yeah, Tony Ferguson, I just real quick, obviously, you know, winning the interim lightweight title and potentially setting up some big things with him and Connor. And of course, now we're having the Khabib fight instead. This was going into this, I mean, were you kind of on Team Tony, or were you thinking Kevin Lee had a shot here? What do you remember about the outcome of this fight?
Yeah, I had Tony. I mean, I think he's just one of the best. You know, it's hard to touch Khabib in that regard. There's always been something about Kevin Lee that I haven't bought into. And it's one of those things where I see all of his physical tools, but I haven't bought into him doing it consistently at the top that we see, you know, the champions do. And, you know, you saw it here. He gets this chance, and, you know, with the staph infection, obviously, that was an odd thing to come out afterwards. And it was kind of anticlimactic the way he just gassed and Tony got the submission and the fight was over.
Yeah, it was not a lot of fight there. Yeah, it was probably, I think it may have been, you know, I mean, he talked himself into it. Obviously, the melee with Chiesa at the press conference definitely raised his profile a little bit. And obviously the way he kind of won that was a little bit of a head scratcher. You know, there was a question of verbal submission or just that Chiesa attack. That was kind of weird. So I'm really interested to see what happens in Lee's next fight, and we still don't know when that's going to be yet, which is strange considering it's, you know, almost February. But I think that kind of will tell us a lot as far as how he performs that next fight and really in 2018 and see if he gets a shot back. Let's move to UFC Sao Paulo. That happened later in the month, and really, you know, this was an FS1 card, not a huge deal here. Obviously, Lyoto Machida returning all of a sudden with little fanfare, albeit in the main event, returning after 2 years. You saw the validation for something that really was kind of a really kind of stupid way for this substance that USADA flagged him for that he took that really provides no benefit at all, but is still in the performance enhancing drug list or what have you, or supplement list. It's kind of just a real head scratcher. Machida chose not to fight it and lost an important 2 years off his career. Came back here and looked like he was off for 2 years, just getting starched completely by Derek Brunson. First round knockout. Silence the Sao Paulo crowd, but really this was, you know, there was that. Derek Brunson, obviously one of these guys, and we saw it this past weekend, unfortunately for him, that, that run kind of came to an end against Jacare Souza, but a guy that was really kind of overlooked. But to me, this was really kind of the coming out party, be it good or bad, for Colby Covington, in that he faced Damian Maia in the co-main event of the night and just completely dominated him for three rounds, and then did this classic promo afterward, essentially insulting Brazil, calling the filthy animals, calling the place a dump. And we'd see a lot more from Colby Covington and hear a lot more from him the rest of the way, and he still does not have a fight booked as of right now. But he really kind of made his push to be a guy to not only take seriously in the cage, but also to listen to outside the cage and really kind of build up the heel persona. And from spoiling Star Wars to insulting countries, and later we'll talk about a boomerang attack, this was really a strange coming out party for Colby Covington.
Yeah, I'll just put it all out there. Not a fan at all of what he's doing. I get it. I understand it. And I love a good heel. But whenever you start going into the filthy animal stuff, that's where I draw the line. I think there's a firm line there that he overstepped. And, you know, again, I understand. I assume he's playing a heel. I mean, he's at American Top Team with a diverse collection of characters, including many from Brazil. He's a good fighter. I actually think that fight could have been a firm title shot getting fight for him if it was impressive. But it wasn't. It wasn't the knockout. It wasn't the submission. It was a fairly uninteresting three-round dominant performance against Damian Maia, who gassed out going for all the takedowns that were stuffed. So I think overall, I think he's definitely elevated his platform in the welterweight division. I don't think that performance gets him to where he wants to be. I expect, you know, at least one more fight before he gets a title shot.
Yeah, the one unfortunate thing out of all this is that it just there wasn't really any. Obviously, he was calling out Tyron Woodley, and Woodley just was like, "Nah, I'm not interested in doing that." So that kind of killed that for a while. Even though every time Woodley says that, he ends up fighting the guy anyway with, you know, Stephen Thompson and oh my God, who did Woodley just fight in his last fight? Oh my God, I can't remember who it was. Anyway, so the Woodley's last fight, it was the same thing. Like he. He basically he's like, I'm not going to fight him. And he fights him. And then he actually wins. I think it was Damon Maya. Might have been the last fight. So it was just, you know, I don't want to say a statute of limitations, but there's a limit on, or a period of time which a guy is still kind of in the mainstream, or in the conversation with MMA fans. And then it's like, no fight. And I think Luke Thomas mentioned this actually earlier today with Darren Till. It's where they're kind of on that border where Darren Till, like, he had that big win over Donald Cerrone, which we're going to talk about in a second. But, you know, there's no follow-up. There's no, like, hey, when's this next fight? So you kind of, like, hook on to, you see a guy that a couple months later you expect to see him again with Covington. Yeah, I agree. I didn't think this was a title shot-earning performance, but I think it would have been really good to have him have a fight booked by now. You know, there's no shortage of UFC cards, as we know, this first 3 months of the year. And there's just like, there's no idea when he's going to fight. Woodley's having surgery. So it's kind of like, and RDA has got the next title shot. So that momentum's kind of being lost. And it goes to, you know, he's trying to keep himself in the public eye by just by doing things on Twitter and kind of saying things. And at this point, the act is getting a little old because there's no action behind it. So yep. I don't know, a little bit of momentum lost by Covington, but still, this was kind of at least he is trying to make a name for himself, albeit in a way that is a little bit annoying and offensive to some.
Yeah. You run the risk of falling out of the public consciousness. And that's something the UFC really has to rectify going forward. I mean, we've seen it become increasingly worse. I mean, even today with Michael Bisping saying that he's not on the UFC London card, so don't buy tickets, and because tickets go on sale on Wednesday, and they still don't have a main event for that card. The UFC is increasingly, you know, maybe 6-7 weeks out, whereas in years past, we would know almost the full card 4-6 months out, and that allowed people to look at a card, get to know the fighters. You had extended promotion, whether it's a press conference or just social media. Now they're just letting fighters drift out of that public consciousness, and fans are left wondering what's happening.
Right. Yep. And also with guys more, posturing, it takes a lot longer. It's harder to make some of the fights that we want to see. There's guys sitting on the sidelines right now, and we're just kind of waiting, you know, and it's unfortunate, especially with, this run of shows that dates back for months. It's every single weekend there's a show, and these cards are very thin. And some of these guys just kind of sitting here waiting like Covington. It's like, let's get going already. So let's do this. Let's go through the rest of the month. So again, I ripped through these kind of a rapid fire fashion. And then afterwards, Nathan, if there's some of the stuff from this month that stands out, certainly we can discuss those for a few minutes. So let's start with some results. UFC Fight Night Dansk, Darren Till, just mentioned a minute ago, running through Donald Cerrone. One round all it took. This is an afternoon card for us here in the States. This was a dominant performance by Darren Till, and really, which opened me a star-making performance. We just need to see when he's going to fight in there again. Karolina Kolvakevich went on one of this card as well. Artem Lobov lost on this show, and unfortunately that led to a backstage Conor McGregor gay slur that was caught by a camera. Also, during this fight, a little bit of foreshadowing, referee Mark Goddard warning McGregor to sit in his seat during the Lobov fight. We see that rivalry tend to rile up a little bit later. We'll talk about that. Bellator 184, Darren Caldwell beating Eduardo Dantas for the bantamweight title. I think that was something they were pretty satisfied with. Seemingly they've been trying to groom Caldwell for that spot for at least a year. Got the title opportunity and then beat Dantas for the title. Then Bellator 185, Gegard Mousasi making his promotional debut, edging out Alexander Shlemenko. And Shlemenko would later, I think he was going to appeal the commission that he actually won the fight or something along those lines. But we know how all that stuff goes. Nothing came of that. UFC honored Las Vegas shooting victims. You guys remember that terrible tragedy in Las Vegas that happened last year, and they did a really good job honoring their victims, donating $1 million toward those victims. And during UFC 116, and this was kind of the fight, the first event after that, it was less than a week after that, Dana White ripping country singer Jason Aldean, because Jason Aldean chose to do Saturday Night Live instead of UFC 216 that night. So Dana White, always willing to start a rivalry no matter who it is. King Mo was hurt. He was supposed to fight Liam McGarry in a Bellator fight. Big surprise there. Rafael Natal, longtime UFC fighter, tried to retire at his mid-30s. Henry Cejudo, this was an interesting story, broke his ankle escaping California wildfires. This was obviously a big story that happened last year. Broke his ankle, still did not miss his fight in December, so impressive there. Chris Holdsworth, remember him? He actually kind of talked out a little bit, and this kind of went to the whole TJ versus Cody Garbrandt situation. Says that Dillashaw was the one that injured him in training. There was like videos potentially released, and just a really ugly situation there. But him coming out and saying that TJ Dillashaw injured him during training. Raquel Pennington broke her leg, and she was out of her planned UFC 219 title fight. Not announced title fight, but everyone knew it was kind of heading that direction with Amanda Nunes.
Interject here.
Yeah, go for it.
And no pun intended. That injury was a lucky break for the UFC, given where the bantamweight division is now. And at that time, they already had Cyborg versus Holly Holm booked. But after that fight, you were looking at both divisions where you're like, there's nothing left for these women. I mean, you can go through the current top five for the women's bantamweight. Valentina Shevchenko is ranked number one. Amanda Nunes just beat her, and Shevchenko is going to flyweight. Mm-hmm. Holly Holm just lost to Cyborg. Juliana Pena, she's pregnant. She's out of action. Number four, Pennington, now she's injured. She would have had that title shot. And five, Jermaine Durandamé, who had absolutely no goodwill after the way she handled the featherweight title situation. So there was nothing for Amanda, nothing for Cyborg, and nothing that can come up real soon. So now the UFC has the perfect opportunity, perfect timing to do Cyborg versus Nunes. And it looks like they're in talks to that. Hopefully we see that this summer, because it's the absolute perfect timing to do this super fight where it's not going to affect either division.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of champion versus champion fights coming up this summer, no doubt about that. And could also all be on the same card. Imagine that. Let's see. We'll go back to UFC Sydney. Mark Hunt was pulled from this fight versus Fabricio Werdum. Werdum versus Tybura was going to headline instead. Mark Hunt was definitely not happy with the UFC or anyone in particular. This is due to a column he wrote, quote-unquote wrote, for the Australian version of the Players Tribune. And he was went on a little tirade against Dana White. Dana White said Hunt was never actually cleared to fight, so it was just kind of the latest chapter in this ongoing feud between Mark Hunt and the UFC. Obviously, the lawsuit being out there and all that stuff. UFC Fresno was booked. We got Ortega versus Swanson as the main event, and this was also Cub Swanson's final contracted fight under the UFC. UFC 218 got some fights announced there. Frankie Edgar versus Max Holloway. Justin Gaethje versus Eddie Alvarez. Paul Felder versus Iaquinta was on and then off due to injury by Iaquinta. And Charles Oliveira stepped in for him. UFC 219, it was announced we were going to get the return of Carlos Condit, going to book to return to face Neil Magny. We also finally were going to get the return of Khabib Nurmagomedov taking on Edson Barboza in a fight a lot of people were looking forward to. UFC on Fox 28 booked Robbie Lawler versus RDA, a great fight there at welterweight to main event. Aldo versus Lamas, and also Mike Perry versus Santiago Ponzinibbio. So that looked to be a fun show. December really starting to shape up here in the month of October. We kind of really starting to get the full press for promotion for UFC 217 with Bisping and GSP. They did a press conference before UFC 216. Bisping accusing GSP of taking steroids. There was a little bit of shoving going on, so we kind of got that in full swing. That fight that would be just weeks away. Unfortunate scene over in Japan. A pancreas fighter was literally dragged onto the scale and still made weight for a fight the next day. This was a scene that appalled a lot of people, and really was just, again, this ongoing talk about weight cutting. Just a really sad and very very stark scene for a pancreas fighter, and I think he actually won the next day by decision. So just a really bizarre situation. Rico Verhoeven, we talk about Glory Kickboxing just a little bit here, because Rico Verhoeven knocking out Bigfoot Silva, former UFC, former Strikeforce fighter, in very devastating fashion there. Again, kind of why was Silva fighting in the first place? A lot of talk about Conor McGregor and potentially Ronda Rousey and Travis Brown going to appear at WrestleMania. I think everyone just kind of throws out random names here or there. Dana White saying Mayweather and McGregor did 6.7 million pay-per-view buys. CM Punk was quote-unquote working on his next fight. Keep in mind, this is back in October. We still have no idea when he is going to return. Hopefully someday he will. Shayna Baszler, former UFC fighter and obviously a fighter all over the place, signed a deal with WWE. Paulie Malignaggi still wanted that Conor McGregor fight, and Dana White said, nope, that's not happening. He also decided to shut down the talk of a Nate Diaz trilogy fight and said probably, quote-unquote, Ferguson is next for McGregor, and there's talk about negotiations there. Obviously, we see where that's gone at this point. You mentioned Juliana Pena. She is pregnant, or was obviously announced she was pregnant in October. John Gotti III, if you guys are familiar with mob lore, was making his MMA debut. MVP, Mr. Page there, made his pro boxing debut and won via third-round TKO. Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira was flagged for a banned diuretic, was not necessarily suspended by USADA, but was pulled from his fight, threatened to sue if he was going to be suspended. Speaking of that, Jesse Taylor accepting a one-year suspension for his USADA flag. An NHL hockey player used a Superman punch at a fight on the ice. A fighter actually won with a Boston Crab, which was pretty crazy. Combate America's got a deal with NBCSN for a one-night, one-man, eight-man tournament. And finally, UFC 220 was booked for January 20th in Boston. So given all that, you talked a little bit, what did that month stood out to you?
Yeah, there wasn't a ton of stuff other than a lot of the fights being booked. You know, you finally got to look at November and December and get that anticipation really start to boil. So that was really all that was there in October, other than, you know, 216, which we touched upon. It was just looking forward to the end of the year and what that was going to bring.
Yeah, so let's get right to November, because this was I in a previous show I said July was such a huge month news-wise when you really look back on it with the Jones win, and then later a few weeks was pulled from his of the latest USADA flag, rather. And then July was huge. It was the build of McGregor Mayweather and all this. But November, and looking back at this month was awesome when it comes to stuff. Let's start right at the top. Really, probably the event of the year in a lot of people's eyes. This was definitely, I think, 1 and 1A for me with that event in July. UFC 217, really, UFC returns to Madison Square Garden, and really the return and triumph of George St. Pierre. Coming back after 4 years' absence against Michael Bisping and fought some adversity. This was obviously his first fight at 185. You know, fighting through some adversity and knocking Bisping down and submitting him, and just it was a real tremendous scene. You know, obviously the elbows, it was a pretty wild and crazy night, and for a lot of reasons. There was the main event, there was the co-main with obviously TJ Dillashaw defeating Cody Garbrandt on the show to reclaim the bantamweight title, second round knockout. This was a fun fight as well, and again this rivalry just boiled over, and TJ reclaiming the title that he lost to Dominic Cruz, and then also just a complete stunner, Rose Namajunas knocking out TKO rather whatever it was of Joanna Jędrzejczyk, just a complete stunner. Joanna just obviously blaming bad weight cutting afterwards, but Rose Namajunas just completely, you know, making her claim as this force at flyweight, strawweight rather. This was, you know, and I'm not really get to the undercard yet, but this was, if you talk about a top three, I mean, this was so newsworthy for all these title changes, and it felt like, you know, the good guys kind of won, right? You have GSP, Rose, and I guess depending on who you root for, TJ Dillashaw in a way, but, you know, this was quite a night. And these top three, I mean, GSP alone was amazing, but these top three fights were something else.
Yeah, absolutely, and nothing stands out more to me than Rose Namajunas's stunning knockout of Joanna Jędrzejczyk. That was something no one saw. You know, whenever we did our predictions, I was even like, yeah, she has a chance, but it's going to be by submission. Nope. Yeah. She absolutely looked sensational. And it's interesting with Joanna, who everyone loves and adores for good reason. I do too. But we talk about how Ronda doesn't address her loss as well. Joanna hasn't addressed that loss well. You know, she talked about the weight cutting issues. She fired her the people that were behind the weight cutting. She still calls herself Joanna Champion. She doesn't really acknowledge that loss all that well, which is a little curious, especially since the rematch is now booked.
Yeah, so and we'll get a chance to see that coming up in Brooklyn. But yeah, you're right. I think she, you know, she's a very prideful person, and she, you know, she, I will give her credit. She did do, she at least did media afterwards and talk, where Ronda just kind of went in a cocoon and didn't really talk and kind of turned her back in a lot of ways on the sport and just kind of treated it a lot differently. But yeah, Jan Jacek at least gave the option to have people kind of talk about what she was talking about, and I definitely will give her credit for that. But that was one of those going into it that, you know, Jacek was a huge favorite, and the other fights, you know, GSP, you know, still people believed. I think I might have, even if I picked Bisping or GSP for that fight, but it was one of those fights where you could see GSP winning, you could see him losing, and you kind of visualize it with Cody and TJ, both guys so talented that. You could either way. You could be like, okay, I can see that. But that Rose and Jacek fight, just because the way that she had looked and really been so dominant for so long, that was a big stunner. And obviously, the one of the things that people talked about a lot was when she really kind of questioned Rose's mental makeup and whether she's ready, and you know, whether she'd be ready to be the champion. And you know, she got a little bit of blowback for some of that. But I think there is something to that in that, you know, Rose has talked about some of her issues in the past, and being the champion, there is a lot more pressure. And I think we're going to see, she is now the hunted, and you know, Jacek is coming in here, and she'll probably, I'm interested to see what the odds are going into this, if she'll be a favorite or not. But, you know, Rose will come into this as the person that now she has to defend. And, you know, if she defends and successfully, I mean, that's you know, that puts her well on her way. But I think there's still kind of this thing, and maybe in Jacek, maybe the reason she's so defiant about this loss is that in her mind is simply just a fluke, and that there's no way, and perhaps she'll be proven right. But I think that fight coming up, that rematch, is a lot of interesting for a lot of different reasons. And, you know, we'll see if someone in Jacek said is true.
Yeah, and those mental issues will always be a question surrounding Rose. You know, she's talked about openly, but you go back to The Ultimate Fighter. You know, she was on there and she was in tears crying, and that caused a lot of people to say, is she mentally tough enough to do this? And then, of course, she got through the show to the finals, lost. She's had sort of some ups, a lot of ups, some downs. And so you see where that's going to be a storyline for the foreseeable future. But she was also so young when she did that show. So it's just a natural maturation process. And now that she is a champion, now there are more media obligations, more obligations from the UFC. We'll see how that plays a role. And, you know, if she goes out there and does it again to Joanna, I think she can lay all of that talk to rest for the rest of her career.
Yep, absolutely. And also, you know, this whole card was really a lot of fun. A lot of finishes. Ovin St. Preux just completely knocking Corey Anderson flat. That was one of the notable knockouts of the year. Steve Wonderboy Thompson returning to action, edging out Jorge Masvidal. Also some other good finishes on the show. But one of the things that I distinctly remember about this and put this in the notes is that kind of with the low buzz alerts, I remember this week going into it and talking on this show, and you heard other people talking, just for a reason, just didn't feel like there was a lot of buzz going in the show. I think people were interested in seeing what GSP was all about, and they were looking forward to Cody and TJ, and I think they were going to kind of see what the rest of the card, how it played out. But, you know, I remember the people emailing us about, you know, that, you know, the year before the McGregor tickets were so much more expensive, went so much faster, and that they were trying to, you know, maybe do some deals or something like that, and then just tickets weren't moving. So it was almost like trying to say, well, you know, UFC's on the decline. Obviously, it was a struggle of a year in a lot of ways, but, you know, afterwards, it didn't seem to matter, because this pay-per-view did over, I believe, close to, if not over, a million buys. It was hugely successful in terms of, you know, obviously it wasn't as big as the first show, but it was still a big success for the UFC. It was a hugely buzzworthy show, newsworthy and all right. But the pay-per-view buys really were what surprised me, and I think surprised a lot of people, is how big it was. And it's always interesting when these things come up, in that we think we know what's going on, but there's this quiet kind of like contingent over here to the left or the right, wherever it is, where you think about like the silent majority, like they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to buy the show, but I'm not going to, you know, tell people I'm buying the show. There's this group over here that we really don't know when they're going to spring into action. Say, we're going to buy this. Perhaps it was GSP. Perhaps it was just, you know, I assume it'd be GSP, but it was just something. This group got activated to buy this and really surprised all of us. And that's what really kind of stuck with me. It still sticks with me that sometimes we think these shows are going to do poorly. Sometimes we think they're going to be gangbusters. And, you know, it's kind of fun to be proven wrong on some of this stuff, you know?
Yeah. Obviously, I think GSP is the catalyst behind that, but also Michael Bisping, because where GSP is not that flamboyant, boisterous voice, Bisping picked up all of that slack for the promotion going into it. So I think Bisping kind of keeping the event going and having a little buzz there. And obviously TJ and Cody also played into that too, where they were on social media going back and forth throughout seemingly endless. So I think that factored into it, and GSP just happened to be the catalyst where, you know, you're going to get 700,000-800,000 buys from GSP alone, but then you have Bisping and others keeping that those feuds going, keeping that buzz out there, and that kind of pushed it over the top.
Yeah. We'll go to Bellator 187, and this was just a tape delay show from Ireland that had no real buzz going into it, which, you know, a lot of these Bellator shows you can pretty much say that for. It was a tape delay, as I mentioned. It was, you know, I remember sitting here on a Friday night in my house and Friday afternoon rather, and Dave sent in Dave Meltzer sent in an email saying, we got to get something up about this Conor madness going on right now. I'm like, okay, what is happening right now? And I go to Twitter and saw the news that Conor jumped the cage during a fight. I mean, this was kind of like, as I'm first seeing this, I'm like, what the hell is going on over there? So it was just like Conor jumped the cage during a Bellator fight. And I'm like, what at a Conor Bellator fight? What's going on here? So, so basically, as I mentioned earlier, this, you know, the issue with Mark Goddard spilled over again. It was a McGregor camp guy, Team Straight Blast, whatever it's called. One of their guys was fighting, and there's just this confusion at the end of the round. McGregor wasn't cornering him, but he decided to jump the cage, and the fight necessarily wasn't over yet. And Mark Goddard started getting in with him, and just there was complete madness, chaos, and melee. And this was just a weird situation. Bellator was more than happy to have this happen, and they will probably not say this ever publicly, but you got to believe a tape delay show for them to get the buzz and saying that Conor McGregor is going to be on our show tonight. Wait till you see what he does. And everyone was kind of curious of what was going to happen. I mean, a lot of people obviously had seen the clips by that point, but to be able to kind of have that buzz and be able to essentially use his name for a show that really wasn't going to get a lot of views anyway, this was like just a golden goose just decided to lay three dozen eggs. It just was like, you got to be kidding me. And they're able to push this. And then this whole thing afterwards with, and I will never believe this, that, you know, what can they do to Conor? What can anyone do to Conor? And that the Association of Boxing Commissioners claimed that they were told that, you know, UFC had removed McGregor from the show closer, the final show of the year, UFC 219, due to the issue. Nobody believes that. Absolutely no. Nobody believes that fight. Believes that he was going to fight Ferguson on that show. And it was just like, it was kind of like, you know, what it really made the industry really kind of look and be like, this guy really can do, I wouldn't say can do no wrong, but he's untouchable in so many ways. And this was like another glaring example of that.
Yeah, I remember being on Twitter and talking with everyone at Bleacher Report, you know, in our small team for MMA coverage, and it happened, and we were just like, what is going on? And of course, you know, first you see the first video, and then someone else has a cell phone video from a different camera, and then there's a different, and as soon as that happened, the initial thought was, Bellator loves this, and we were talking amongst ourselves, like, they have to tweet something out, they have to put this in a commercial, we'll be like, watch this tonight. And it took a few minutes, but they did. And that was going to be the big story about that. And as you said, the 219 thing, no one believed that. That was nonsense. Yeah. I'm not sure what the whole point behind that was.
Yeah, I think just to say that they did something, but they didn't really officially say it. It was just, I don't know. It was one of those things where everyone's like, okay, we don't believe this one bit. Can we just all drop the ruse? You know, we're all adults here. But yeah, this was just a crazy thing. And you know, Bellator, again, one of these Friday night shows, just Conor McGregor, you know, it's unpredictable. So we'll get to, there's so many other things that happened this month. I'm breaking up this list here, and I'm going to go over this first section, then we'll see if there's anything that stood out to you, because there's a few things here in this first section, then we'll get to this other one. Let's see. So Conor McGregor was talking about that he wanted equity and ownership, ownership in the UFC in order to come back, and that was, you know, this was months after he made a lot of money competing in boxing, and obviously knows his worth and was really going to make the UFC pay if they wanted to have him come back. And at this point, we still don't know when that's going to happen. There was this rumor of a big bar brawl over there, and that Dana White saying he didn't believe it happened, or else it would be bigger news. Admitting that he may never fight again, saying there are negotiations. There was these rumors about these issues with crime families that McGregor was having. Some Irish crime writer mentioned that Conor McGregor is in a lot of danger. There was just this whole thing, like, what is going on? Like, he obviously likes to kind of stay in the news, but while he's not fighting, but there was just this kind of air of mystery of what is going on over there. Congressional hearing was announced for the Ally Expansion Act in UFC, and I put in UFC and Zuffa. UFC and Viacom were, of course, no big surprise, lobbying against that. Dana White saying that 2017 was their biggest year in the company's history, which everyone kind of rolled their eyes at. Bellator 186, we had Ryan Bader defeating Lynn Vassell to retain his title. And also, I think if I had asked you, and you may have been able to answer this, if I had asked you before this, who is Bellator's flyweight champion, would you have been able to tell me?
Absolutely not.
I wouldn't have either. Alima Leigh McFarland, I completely forgot this title existed, won the first ever flyweight championship. I cannot remember who she beat, and we'll just move on. Sage Northcutt moving to Team Alpha Male, obviously a top prospect there and going to a team better suited his weight. UFC announcer Q1 for 2018, Charlotte, St. Louis, London, Vegas, Austin, Australia, Brazil, Boston, and Orlando. We've seen how some of those cards have turned out. Dana White saying that Zuffa boxing's coming, no formal plan. Speaking of boxing, Manny Pacquiao was hinting that he was going to fight Conor McGregor, and Dana White didn't really care for that. We'll get to a little bit more about that later on. Speaking of Conor McGregor again, Oscar De La Hoya claiming he was going to have a comeback fight against McGregor, which everyone kind of rolled their eyes at. There was this random story about UFC Fight Pass mining computers for cryptocurrency. So that was kind of a weird thing that didn't really get picked up. But people kind of like, what is going on? It was something that was happening, but it may have been a little bit more less widespread than people thought. Unfortunately, Frankie Edgar got hurt. He was out of his UFC 218 title fight with Max Holloway. Come to the rescue, Jose Aldo, come back for a rematch there, and that came together. It was a lot of people trying to get in line for that fight, and Holloway's like, I'll fight anyone, and was going to get that rematch in Detroit. Dominic Cruz, unfortunately, this was a run of injuries. He was out of his UFC 219 fight with Jimmy Rivera and John Lineker after a little bit of negotiations there, got that fight, and eventually that would fall through. Greg Hardy, former Dallas Cowboy, infamous guy, won his MMA debut as an amateur. Michael Johnson announced he was going to drop to featherweight and fight Darren Elkins. Anderson Silva, suspended due to a USADA violation. He was out of his gas, the fight with Calvin Gastelum, the main event in UFC Shanghai. And Michael Bisping, out of all the people, just weeks after losing to GSP and obviously getting pretty dinged up in that, decided he was going to step in and fight, which, again, this month of eye rolls was another big eye roll of what is this guy doing? How are they letting him do this? And then at UFC Shanghai, Kelvin Gastelum knocked out Michael Bisping in the first round, and away we go. So let's go over that first section. What stood out to you?
The two biggest things stands out, Gastelum and Bisping, get to that in a second. But Greg Hardy making his MMA debut, you know, obviously his past will always follow him, but he's going to drive a lot of eyeballs to the heavyweight division as he makes his progression. He's an extremely athletic, heavy-handed person. He's training at American Top Team. He's doing his due diligence as he enters the sport. His competition today is awful, but you expect that. It's amateur heavyweights.
Yeah.
So he's doing the right thing as far as his professional life goes. He'll be interesting to watch. I know he's got another fight coming up here early in the first quarter of 2018, and that'll be under Legacy's banner, just another amateur fight, I believe. He's going to be very interesting to watch.
So we're basically going to say that Bellator is going to sign him at some point this year?
I would not be surprised if he signs with the UFC at some point in 2018.
Really?
Huh. If I'm making a projection, I say maybe summertime, especially if he gets one or two pro fights in early in 2018, I would say he will sign to the UFC.
Huh. Interesting. That'll be interesting to see how they handle that. If that is to happen, really any organization, given the, you know, given the sordid past and kind of how he negotiates that, especially with a big corporate entity like Endeavor, but you know, maybe they give him some media training, they're able to figure it out, but we'll see. I think what else stands out to me is, it was one of those that, and maybe it's interesting because it wasn't as big of a story. I mean, it was big, but it didn't like, wasn't as mind blowing. And maybe because of the second violation was Anderson Silva, failing another USADA violation. And he has had a weird, very strange last few years in the sport, and who knows if he'll ever come back and how this kind of all plays out. But, you know, with the obviously the Weidman losses and just not the same fighter. Obviously, he stepped up and got some goodwill fighting Daniel Cormier on short notice at UFC 200. But this was it was just kind of this thing happened. It's just like, oh, again? And, you know, he just kind of like, all right, clearly that he was lying the first time because this happened. And it was just kind of one of those things where you're kind of like, this is unfortunate, but it didn't feel as surprising, maybe because it was the second time around.
Yeah. It's an unfortunate situation, an unfortunate reality you deal with in professional sports, especially for an aging fighter that wants to get that glory one more time. So they'll do anything. So anytime an older fighter gets popped, I'm not surprised. It's just really unfortunate.
Yeah. Let's see. And obviously, the Bisping, why he was allowed to fight. And I think we kind of understand that, but that was really unfortunate, but,
shameful.
Yeah. These guys just, they want to fight and this is all they know and they make bad choices. And I think Bisping, we said this that the best way to get over a bad loss is to get right back on the horse, but I don't think that's necessarily sound advice when you've taken some punishment a few weeks before and he paid for it. He made a mistake and then got hurt even more. And we'll see, we're talking about him turning or basically saying he's not going to be on that London show. I think that's good for him because that'd be another kind of relatively quick turnaround. I think he and this is going to be his last fight coming up. I think he definitely wants to take some time off, heal up and, be smart about it and make us into a bigger deal. And you'll see kind of what happens there. But yeah, unfortunately that he had to do this and that the card and the organization kind of put him in that position where they're like, we need to quote unquote save the show. And to do that, you kind of put someone else's health at risk. It's really unfortunate.
And there was no need to save the show. There was no need to save the show. It was a fight pass event. No one's tuning in.
No. And that there was, and I didn't put anything else in the notes on the show because I don't remember really anything about it. Even after going through this, it was like, there's nothing of consequence really that happened on that show. However, UFC Norfolk, this is one of the shows I don't fly out to shows that often. This was one I really considered flying out to. And if I didn't have a little one at home, I think I probably would have. Because this was just, I love these crossroads fights and I love these, kind of where guys are at, these veteran versus veteran fight. This was just so much fun. Dustin Poirier finishing Anthony Pettis in a very bloody fight after this random, it was a rib injury or something along those lines. Pettis was on the ground, just kind of pulled up lame and the fight was over. But up until this point, this was just a awesome, awesome fight. Matt Brown in his not so retirement fight, brutally knocking out Diego Sanchez with a vicious elbow. Sage Northcutt picking up a big win the show. Marlon Moraes picking up a big win the show. Andre Arlovsky on the show as well. Travis Brown Matt Brown essentially unretiring or not really committing to retirement afterward, and now he's definitely not retiring because he's going to fight Carlos Condit coming up. Clay Guida's on the show. This I believe this is against Joe Lozon. So this was a fun show in for a lot of reasons, and that main event was fun and really notable stuff. And this was the ultimate fight or FS1 show. This was just awesome. Love this stuff. UFC Sydney, not exactly a really fun show. Complete that dichotomy. Fabricio Werdum decisioning Marcin Tybura. And Nick Lentz also on the show submitting Will Brooks. Ben Askren, a guy that probably should have got his opportunity in the UFC. Not probably, should have got his opportunity to fight in the UFC at some point in his career. Retiring after a final fight against Shinya Aoki. Just 57 seconds it took Ben Askren to win there. Bellator announcing their 8-man Grand Prix tournament for the heavyweight title. This title has been on ice for years for some reason. Finally, we're going to get a winner, hopefully at some point in 2018. Fedor versus Mir at this point are being rumored, and they did officially announce Rampage Jackson versus Chael Sonnen for January 20th. Mirko Krokop, not exactly retiring. Again, the Ryzen promotion said he was going to come out of retirement for a few fights. This guy cannot stay away no matter what. Jack Swagger, the WWE former champion there, Jake Hager, coming out and saying he was going to sign with Bellator, so another pro wrestler going to MMA. Tyron Woodley and Nate Diaz, this is a big UFC 219 rumor that eventually would be debunked, or they couldn't sign a deal, or just didn't come together. This led to Cyborg Holly Holm talks reviving, and Cyborg signing a new deal with the UFC, because there were a lot of questions about her contract throughout the year. And then, we mentioned UFC Sydney earlier, and mentioned Colby Covington. Of all the headlines I never thought I would see in 2017, and maybe because it was such a bizarre year by all accounts, I should have expected to see it. Fabricio Werdum threw a boomerang at Colby Covington, and then Colby Covington used a gay slur on a video running away from him. This was just a very strange thing. So let's talk about this section. What stands out?
It's hard to say that a boomerang incident doesn't stand out. I mean, you can't deny the pure comedy of the headline that induced. And Covington brought it upon himself. It was, but still, a boomerang, really a boomerang. Wow.
Yeah.
It's a crazy sport we cover.
It certainly is. Certainly is. And the Bellator tournament, I thought that was, I'm glad they announced it, and I'm glad they kind of had a plan for it. Obviously, it was a few heavyweights and a lot of light heavyweights going up. So, you know, call that what you will, and a lot of heavyweights that probably should have got an opportunity on the sporting end of things, not getting that opportunity there. But, you know, I think we'll see how this tournament plays out this year. Obviously, the first fight with Rampage and Sonnen was kind of boring, and hopefully the rest of them will not be that way. But, you know, they're trying something, and I'm glad they at least have a plan in place. And Scott Coker loves his Grand Prix. You know, he loves his tournaments.
Yeah. And at first I was a little cold on the matchmaking for, you know, they pitted all the light heavyweights against each other and all the heavyweights against each other. But I actually think that works out well because Sonnen Rampage did have a high probability to be a boring fight. It was, even though it was surprising that Sonnen took it to Rampage in the way he did. King Mo, Ryan Bader, I think that has another high probability to be a boring fight.
Yeah.
But after that first round, I think there's going to be a lot of intrigue. You know, potential fight between Sonnen and Fedor. You know, Matt Mitrione potentially meeting Ryan Bader. The semifinals to this could be really interesting. So I think the matchmaking was actually very well thought out.
Yep, I agree. Let's go to this last section. Not a ton of newsworthy stuff here, but Rashad Evans announcing he was going to go back up to light heavyweight. Volkan Ozdemir arrested for aggravated battery. However, still going to have his title shot coming up at UFC 220 against Daniel Cormier, which was also announced during this month. So that was kind of an interesting side plot there. John Jones' next PED hearing was pushed back to February. UFC TV deal, as of this point, not looking too great. We still don't really have any idea what's going on. Shane Carwin said he was very interested in the Bellator tournament and possibly coming out of retirement for that. Speaking of, Chuck Liddell saying he needs the quote-unquote right offer to return. I hope he doesn't come back. There's this feeling that he's going to get some opportunity but in Bellator, but we'll see about that. Tai Hung Bang was given a 10-month sentence for UFC fight fixing, a story that really didn't get a lot of play, but this whole fight fixing thing, this was something that kind of just, I think everyone in the UFC end was probably happy to see go away because they don't want other people maybe potentially asking other questions or, you know, looking into other aspects, not that a ton of fights are fixed or there's been a, you know, widespread call or anything like this for more investigation, but this is kind of one of those things I think they were more happy to, I don't even know if they publicly commented on it. They probably did at some point, but nothing that stands out. So kind of interesting there. Francis Ngannou setting a record for punching power at the UFC Performance Center. Uriah Faber, big surprise, said he wanted to come out of retirement to fight TJ Dillashaw for the title. Matt Mitrione claiming that Joe Silva lied to him in the UFC, and Silva came out and denied it, which was notable because he's been very quiet since retiring, and for him to come out and make a public statement about that shows that you know, perhaps he was telling the truth. Jacare Souza versus Derek Brunson, too, we mentioned that earlier, was booked for the January UFC show in Charlotte. And finally, to close out the month, the Top 26 finale weigh-ins. Talk about these flyweight titles. Sajara Eubanks, after the tough season, missing weight before her title opportunity, and Roxanne Modafari stepping in to fight for the flyweight championship, the very first one against Nico Montano. So not really much there. Anything stand out?
Yeah, the interesting thing about the Bang situation with the fight fixing is I don't believe, if I'm remembering correctly, they didn't actually fix the fight. Like, it was beforehand, there was some strange things with the odds, and then they decided... He decided not to at the last minute.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah, you might be right.
Yeah, it was very, very strange. And I think that might have played into it not getting as much coverage as it did since he didn't go through with it.
Mm. Well, let's go on to December. And we'll, again, there's a lot of stuff that happened here, but we'll, to me, you know, two things stand out for sure. And really kind of 2A. But we'll start with UFC 219. This closed out the year. We talked about Cyborg a lot during the stretch, and she closed out the year, taking on Holly Holm. This was a fight that really one of the reasons I put this up here is because this was another show that did really well on pay-per-view. Not obviously a million, but it did better than expected for a show that didn't exactly have a lot of, you know, mega star power, but it had Cyborg, who's done well in the past, Holly Holm, we've talked about on the show, has always pulled really good ratings when she's been on free TV. Has been part of some big pay-per-views in the past, and maybe a little bit bigger star than we're giving her credit for. Maybe a little bit of the Rousey rub there, but she and Cyborg going at it, and Cyborg retaining in a very hard-fought fight, 5-round fight, and Cyborg winning there. So she's kind of positioning herself as kind of the female face in the UFC, and Khabib Nurmagomedov coming back and really not knowing he'd been off for just over a year and kind of what his how he was going to look against a very tough Edson Barboza. He looked outstanding, just mauling Barboza over 3 rounds and setting up what would be a big fight with him. Hopefully we'll actually have this. This is the fourth time to try to make the fight with Tony Ferguson coming up in Brooklyn. Also, Carlos Condit's return, not as pleasant for him. Getting beat by Neil Magny pretty handily. And there was this unfortunate incident with a Jackson Winklejohn photographer posting something about Cyborg on Instagram, essentially referring to her as a man. So that kind of added this whole other element to it as well. But UFC 219, the I want to say not the coronation of Cyborg as the female king in the UFC, but in a lot of ways really kind of could be. You know, they've tried to have other stars come through like Paige VanZant and some others, but, you know, with, as you mentioned earlier, with these divisions so thin, they kind of need a female face. And as she went in there and beat Holly Holm, and we'll probably see this fight at some point again because of a lack of contenders. But, you know, she got in there, she signed a new contract, she got the job done.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be opposed to seeing a rematch down the line because I expected Cyborg to wear down Holm and finish her in probably the third round. But Holly Holm was ultra impressive, especially in the clinch. It was a lot more competitive than I thought it would be. And I'm excited for a future. And one thing about Cyborg is she doesn't get the credit she deserves for her evolution as a fighter. You go back to her Strikeforce days, it was all about pressure and her strength. Not necessarily power, but strength. And as she has evolved, especially whenever Rousey was around, she started training more grappling. She turned that strength into power. You start seeing just damaging body shots and some knockouts. She gets to the UFC. I think she's a complete all-around fighter. And yeah, as you mentioned, the buy rate for this event was pretty surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting stuff. And also, you know, Khabib, I think there's a contingent out there, and it's getting pretty loud that is really behind him, and whether that translates into, you know, him being a big star for them. I think that's a big question. There's I've heard a lot of sentiment out there that thinks if he beats Ferguson, he is going to be like a much that he could be a breakout, like really big star for the UFC. I don't see that. I just don't see it. I think he could be a good, a good star when it comes to people in the MMA bubble and someone that fans look forward to seeing. You know, if he beats a Conor McGregor, obviously that changes the game a lot. I don't see like a big drawing star in Khabib, but I think he's a fun story. He's someone that's been fun to follow. I think the past year being out, hopefully it's helped him in some form. But you know, he's got a big fight coming up. But he did the job here, and as far as announcing return, he really made people interested in seeing both him versus Ferguson and also him versus Conor. I don't think that fight ever happens, because I don't know. I've said this before. I don't think Conor wants to be one of the boys. I think he wants to fight for big money and big opportunities. Maybe if they were somehow able to do that fight in Russia in a stadium, which I don't think will ever happen, but it's a fun thing to think about. I just don't think Conor wants to be one of the boys, and it'd be unfortunate. But if we were able to see that fight, I think it'd be a lot of fun. But yeah, I mean, when you see Khabib, what do you see?
He's such a hard fighter to grasp on as far as his star power, because if you watch the press conferences and different stuff that they've had in New York and Boston, there's a lot of fans that come out to see him.
Yeah.
But it's not translating into the money aspect, the pay-per-view buys, some of the ratings, but it could. So I definitely see where he could be a star. I just don't know if he's ever going to reach that level. I think he can be a good, you know, maybe 400,000 to 500,000 pay-per-view buys, but as far as worldwide goes, especially in Eastern Europe, I do think there's a chance that he could be a real big star there, and that would be a big boost for the UFC to have someone that they can put on cards there, almost instantly sell out, and have it be a big event there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Perhaps if they have a plan to capitalize on it, and we talked about earlier with Demetrius Johnson and kind of the short-sightedness with the Microsoft thing, and really their ability to take advantage of these situations that kind of fall in their lap, they kind of get so stuck in, well, this is the way we've always done it, and in order to change and make it bigger, you have to.
And they failed in the past.
Yeah, you have
to. They failed because Joanna Jędrzejczyk, you know, here she is, the champion, a dominant champion, Polish, a lot of people in Chicago, New York, you know, the Polish pride in America, and they've ran two shows in Poland. She's not been on either of them.
Right.
They had a perfect opportunity to do Joanna versus Caroline Kowalkiewicz, you know, the two Polish stars. That would have sold out that arena. They didn't do it. They didn't pull the trigger. I think that was a very big missed opportunity. So they failed in the past with European stars in that regard.
Yeah, they really have. Yeah, and you mentioned Chicago. There's a huge Polish population there. And obviously Russia, remember they put is it Strikeforce that had Fedor fight in Chicago, or was a Bellator or something? I can't remember who it was, but yeah, you fight on their home turf. That's like one of the smartest things to do. But for some reason, they don't pull the trigger on that. You're right. UFC 218. So we'll go back a couple of weeks in December. This was a card, man. This was one of the best cards of the year. This was so interesting in so many different reasons. So we'll kind of just go through the quick results and kind of get your thoughts on this. So Max Holloway cementing his status at featherweight as a champion, defeating Jose Aldo again, and really coming into his own as a character, and saying all the right things and saying some interesting things and calling out the right guys and kind of dismissing McGregor off to the side, which is kind of interesting play there. So him defeating Jose Aldo again, and really this new breed at 145, just they have arrived, and some of this old guard is starting to get moved out. Francis Ngannou just putting his, like, I don't say his flag in the sand, but his like giant flagpole that weighs like 1,000 pounds. Like he made a huge statement in nearly decapitating Alistair Overeem, just one of the most picture-perfect knockouts you'll ever want to see, captured perfectly in still images as well. This was just like one of the images of the year in just destroying Alistair Overeem. We had this awesome fight, this fight of the year candidate between Yancy Medeiros and Cowboy Oliveira on the undercard. We had Eddie Alvarez knocking out Justin Gaethje in just an amazing fight there. Henry Cejudo coming back and not really impressively winning, but you know, just a solid win, but didn't really put him after his first two fights, really kind of with this new karate style, karate stance. We're looking for some big things and having either he or Pettis, Sergio Pettis, make a statement to fight DJ next. And neither guy really did that. So as a whole, this card, you've talked about kind of the big fights and the big results. This delivered all the way around.
Yeah, this was a card I had circled because Detroit being close, I'm just a little bit south of Columbus, Ohio. So I saw the card and I was like, I don't know if I want to go up there. They added Eddie Alvarez, Justin Gaethje. I was like, yep, I'm going to Detroit. And it was a fun card. I was a little disappointed that they put Jose Aldo in that position again. I didn't, you know, the leg kicks, they talked about that a lot from the first fight, but it wasn't really that big of a factor to where I thought he was going to defeat Max Holloway on this short of a turnaround. I didn't see, you know, he didn't have a fight in between that made me believe that he was going to get his title back. I was hoping they would go a different direction, but it was fine because you still had a fantastic card top to bottom. Francis Ngannou, that's a fighter. I was in Orlando for his debut, and it's one of those things where whenever you see someone like that, it's etched in that memory is etched in your mind. And I remember being in Orlando and just looking up at that behemoth standing on the scale to weigh in. Never heard of him before. I was like, I'm picking that guy to win. And of course he did. He's blossomed to this big star. The crowds at the pre-fight workouts and stuff were massive. They love watching this guy. And then he sends Overeem into the shadow realm. For a brief moment, I thought the sport had essentially ended in the United States because I thought he was dead.
Yeah.
The way he fell and was stiff immediately, and especially that hammer fist on the ground, I was extremely concerned. But obviously, thankfully, he got up. He was fine. A star-making performance, and he's going to be big. The Medeiros Cowboy fight was phenomenal. Yancy Medeiros continues to look phenomenal. Eddie Alvarez, Justin Gaethje, I mean, that fight was everything you could ask for it to be. And I'm not as down on the Cejudo fight. It definitely wasn't the contender fight he was, you know, hoping for, you know, to give DJ that number one contender again. But I think it's good, you know, because we got DJ TJ coming up. It gives Cejudo a little bit more time. You know, he had the issue with his ankle and his feet from the fire. And I think Cejudo, I still believe he could be the guy that upends Demetrius Johnson down the line. Hmm. He's fantastic grappling, good hands. So I don't mind this performance to get him back on track. You know, he's on the right path to do everything he needs to do. And he could be a good, you know, he's not going to be a huge star, but he could definitely do well as a flyweight, or as well as a flyweight can do in the UFC.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go over this this first section here and then get some thoughts. I think the big story here is GSP vacating the middleweight title due to health issues. Dana White said early in the month in December, he said that GSP was battling colitis, which is a stomach disorder. And GSP having to vacate the middleweight title, didn't want to hold up the division, did an honorable thing. And, of course, Dana White just completely shitting on him throughout the month and continues to do so. And it is just, you say he knew he wouldn't defend the title. And this is
a rare time I am in agreement with the UFC president.
Really? Okay, so what's your thought on this? Let me hear it.
I'll say I'm on both sides. I think it's extremely smart what GSP did. Fighters owe us nothing. So for him to come back, get a middleweight title fight, you know, have it be this huge pay-per-view, that's fantastic. Great for GSP. What I don't like is for him to even say, oh, I signed a contract that says I have to defend this title. I don't necessarily buy into all of his health problems to make 185. I just don't buy into that. I mean, he was a massive welterweight, so he could have just stayed on that same plan and not, you know, and not cut the weight and had no issues. But as soon as he won, you know, I had some people over watching the fight, and I said, he's not going to fight Bobby Knuckles. He's not going to fight Robert Whittaker. He's not going to fight Luke Rockhold. He's not going to fight those guys. Those are bad matchups. They will do extreme harm to GSP. So he made the right decision. I just don't like when a fighter says, oh yeah, I signed a contract that said I must defend the title, and then you immediately vacate it and leave. Just, and I know he did that, you know, to appease the UFC to get that deal done, but he could have fought Tyron Woodley. He can come back and do that fight. For me, that decision lost a little bit of goodwill and speaks to where he's at, which is a fine place to be. I have no problem with that. I always say fighters make money while you can. Do, you know, if there's a money fight, take it. Don't worry about the title. Don't worry about, you know, fighting every contender. If there's a fight that's going to make you a lot of money, you have a short window to do it. You better do it. And GSP did that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad he, I never thought he would defend at 185. I think to that point, yeah, I think I was like, I don't see this guy fighting Rockhold or Yoel. I mean, just imagine if he was to fight Yoel Romero, like just the like the weigh-ins or just, you know, the stare down. Can you just, it's a huge size difference. I just couldn't even picture. I kind of kept picturing that in the back of my head. I was not even thinking about Rockhold or Whittaker as much as like, is he going to stick around to fight a guy like Romero? There's no chance he's going to do that. It just does not compute. Right. But yeah. I'm glad he came back. He had this memorable moment, arguably the most memorable moment of 2017. And I'm glad he dropped the title. I'm still befuddled. I talked about this a lot in the past. I don't understand this relationship that Dana, he just cannot let it go. This thing for whatever happened from UFC 167 and the when GSP didn't give them the heads up that he might be retiring or taking time off and he felt blindsided. I don't know if this all stems from that, if there's issues before, but he still just talks about GSP in a way that is just so one of your big stars. It is. I don't want to say it actually is disrespectful in a lot of ways. And this is the fight game of promoters and fighters. We get all that. And we know what Dana can get and what have you, but it is amazing how much he is still willing to bury one of his top stars that came back and had such a major impact and helping him financially have this quote unquote great, you know, 2017 best year ever. And he headlines Madison Square Garden and just, you know, it's kind of just like just constantly looks to like cut him down and dismiss him almost at every turn. You know, it's bizarre to me.
Yeah. And he does it with other people. I mean, Tyron Woodley's someone you know, last year they went to the Super Bowl together and, you know, it was posted on Instagram. So I was like, oh, they go up and bury the hatchet, but he continues to bury Tyron Woodley. He doesn't promote Demetrius Johnson. Well, it's so strange cause he does that and he's done that in the past. And you kind of wonder, it's like, you're supposed to be the promoter, which means you're supposed to be promoting these people. And he has a bad habit of running down anyone that he thinks does them wrong, that doesn't do the right thing, that maybe has a poor performance, instead of just saying, you know, it was a bad performance tonight, but he's still an ultra talented person. No, he goes out and just buries them for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's bizarre, absolutely bizarre. We'll see if we see GSP, you know, fight again in 2018. Hopefully, do. And yeah, I do not think it's going to be at 185. I think it'll be at 170. And who knows if it'll be a Woodley fight or if it could be something bigger, maybe a McGregor fight. We'll see. Dana White seems to keep dismissing that, but yeah, as we're going to see in the rest of this list, there'll be a lot of things that Dana White says that later get dismissed. Okay, let's get into it. So Jeremy Stephens versus the Korean Superboy Doo Ho Choi, booked for the UFC St. Louis headlining position. Karolina Kovalkiewicz versus Jessica Andrade, booked for UFC on Fox 28. Bellator 189, speaking of women's titles no one seems to care about, Julia Budd retained her featherweight title in a fight that no one remembers. Tough 26, Montano won the flyweight title over Roxanne Modafari. And again, there's just zero buzz about this fight, this title, just this whole thing. I think flyweight will be a lot better in about a year or maybe less once the potential stars kind of go up and go down. Some interesting fighters there. So I think the champion we have today in Montano is not necessarily going to be the champion. Maybe even 6 months from now. We'll have to see. Dana White convinced that DJ versus TJ will happen, but has no timeline on that. He also said that Francis Ngannou, after that vicious knockout of Overeem, was definitely getting the next shot at UFC 220, which was coming up in January, wasting no time in getting that to the top of the Boston card. And I thank him for that because I was there live for that. Greg Hardy, we talked about him winning again his second fight in amateur. CM Punk, you know, not fighting, but still working, getting his BJJ blue belt. So watch out, 170. He's coming at some point in the future, next couple of years. I don't know what will happen first, if the XFL will kick off or if CM Punk will fight again. I'm not really sure which one's going to happen next. Vitor Belfort claimed that his next fight will be his last. Who knows about that? I highly doubt it. UFC 221 was Robert Whittaker versus Luke Rockhold booked and announced that was going to be for the welterweight championship rather, and not the interim title after GSP vacated. Ronda Rousey's WWE deal is rumored to be near finalization. UFC Fresno, this was a fun show. Brian Ortega really staking his claim at being someone to watch at 145 pounds. The sick, amazing standing guillotine submission over Cub Swanson. And Cub Swanson rolled the dice for his free agent fight, and then lost. But Dana White seemed to think that, you know, he's going to make it worth Cub's while to come back and sign a deal, but that hasn't happened yet. And Mara Moraes just completely won the knockouts of the year, knocking out Aljamain Sterling. Just the way he went down, this was just an incredible knockout. This is a lot of fun to watch. Bellator 190, Rafael Carvalho kind of fully got the stink out of that terrible fight with Melvin Manhoff out, knocking out Alessio Sakara in just 44 seconds to retain his title. Dana White saying that he'll sue Manny Pacquiao if he is indeed talking to McGregor about a boxing fight, because Pacquiao insisted that they were talking. Mark Hunt was actually cleared to fight. Big surprise, fighting Curtis Blaydes at UFC 221 coming up. Tim Hague's family planning to sue the city of Edmonton after their son's death in that boxing fight. Mayweather claiming, this was a story that got some legs, Floyd Mayweather claiming that he could make $1 billion in UFC in just 3 to 4 fights time, and Dana White saying that they are talking to Floyd about coming to the UFC, and then Floyd basically the next day saying, okay, that's not happening. And then today, Floyd sharing an Instagram video of him getting into an MMA cage just to kind of get people talking, but we'll see if that ever happens. I highly doubt that. Valentina Shevchenko to make her flyweight debut actually this weekend at UFC Bellum. Also on that show, the headliner, Lyoto Machida, trying one more time to stave off Father Time, taking on the fast-rising Eric Anders, a former football player. Showtime finally announcing what the pay-per-view buy rate was in North America for Mayweather-McGregor, saying $4.3 million. Of course, Dana White disputing that title and saying that number and just saying that was completely wrong, and throwing some F-bombs Showtime's way and basically burning all the bridges there. So that's fun. Bellator 191, Michael McDonald returning after a long absence. His promotional debut along with Valerie Letourneau both winning in their promotional debuts. UFC on Fox, very fun main card show. Rafael Dos Anjos earning a welterweight title shot with a big win over Robbie Lawler. Josh Emmett, a sub for Jose Aldo, missed weight but still knocked out Ricardo Lamas, and now he has a main event fight against Jeremy Stephens coming up. Santiago Ponzinibbio defeating Mike Perry, and then Glover Teixeira being up Mirka Sirkinov in just one round there. MMA trader Robert Falls, a friend to a lot of people, committing suicide. That was unfortunate. Daniel Cormier decided to get into a Twitter beef with Cody Rhodes. That would spill over a little bit more with the Young Bucks, and that would happen in January. Daniel Strauss, unfortunately, hurt in a bad motorcycle accident. Very lucky to be alive. So glad to hear that he is back on the mend. UFC announced they were slightly upping the Reebok pay for the new guys coming in, but also added promotional duties to the contracts for the entire roster, which is pretty interesting. Get that union, guys. Tyron Woodley, talk about him and undergoing shoulder surgery. John Lineker, unfortunately, out of the Jimmy Rivera fight at UFC 219. We're hoping to see that Mara Moraes step up and take that fight. He said he wanted that initially. Then there was a lot of posturing about weight and whether he did want it, not really a great look. And then eventually Jimmy Rivera was just pulled from the card, and we'll see what happens with him next. UFC Austin gang, Donald Cerrone versus Yancy Medeiros as their main event, so that should be a lot of fun. Dana White saying to people that you're a Conor hater if you want to see him stripped of the title. Bellator and Jimmy Smith, this was a surprising story. Them parting ways, could not come to deal terms on a new contract. Jimmy Smith would, of course, sign with the UFC in January. And then Gabby Garcia, for those that are interested in freak show fights, missing weight by 27 pounds, fight called off in a fight she was set to have with a 53-year-old fighter, a former pro wrestler at Ryzen. Nate Marquardt retiring after a long career. And finally, UFC on Fox 28 getting Yoel Romero versus David Branch announced. And that was December. What stood out to you about the rest of that list?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in December. I'll start off real quick with the tough finale. Very sad to see Roxanne not get the title, but Nico Montano looked pretty impressive. I agree with you. I don't even expect she'll defend her title once, given who's going to be in that division. But and maybe that's why the UFC is not doing anything with her right now, but you know, giving her background, I think she's someone that has a decent story to tell to where they can actually invest in her and promote her a little. But I agree with you, maybe they're just waiting to see, because you know, you have Valentina Shevchenko already there, Jessica Eye, who was the former number one, Barb Honchak, of course she lost her fight, but she's a former champion and number one in that division. And there's a lot of interesting talent, good talent. Ariane Lipsky, Knight's fight, Mackenzie Dern, of course she's going to fight at strawweight, but I think flyweight's probably best for her. It's a good solid division that people don't know about. Hopefully they sign the talent, they promote them, but I agree with you, here next year it'll look a lot different, it'll look a lot more talent rich than where it was coming off Tough.
Yeah, it was, I think women's flyweight, I think when the dust settles, if Jacek goes up in weight, and everyone seems to be basically talking about Jacek Shevchenko and when that fight is going to happen. It seems to be like this inevitability, and it's almost like you should have just made that for the title, right? That seems to be what everyone wants. So who knows, you know, here's what's going to happen. Jacek is going to beat Nama Yunus. She's going to regain her title, and immediately Dana White's going to say, we're going to see Jacek go for her second title at Fly. I mean, that's basically going to happen, right? In this year of champion versus champion, that seems almost inevitable, right?
Yeah, they should just go ahead and say that now. That's what's going to happen. Exactly. But, it's, as you said, if she goes up, I mean, people forget, she didn't make her strawweight debut until she joined the UFC. I think it was her final fight before joining the UFC. She knocked out Rosie Sexton in Europe, and it was a heck of a performance. So that's her normal weight, and she can do well there.
Well, you have been a great sport for hanging out with me for an hour and a half, and I want to give you the final word before we get to promoting Twitter and all that good stuff as well. 2017, this is our fourth show we've done recapping the entire year. What will you most remember the year for?
I think it has to be McGregor Mayweather. I mean, it was the biggest story, the biggest promotion, an entertaining fight, even though it kind of went how everyone expected. That spectacle will stick with people for quite a long time.
Yeah, I think it was a big year of transition after the really fun 2016 that just had everyone so excited. In 2017, just in a lot of ways, it sputtered. It really got out of the gate slow, and then there was definitely moments, you know, and there was no shortage of news stories and all that to talk about, obviously, with Mayweather McGregor was huge. The Jones DC fight, obviously, that was huge. GSP's return was big. All the stories in between with various USADA violations and kind of how the sport was changing like that. There was always just different kind of nooks and crannies and all these just different things of like these areas that things were happening in that didn't really translate to the outside, the mainstream world, but for us were pretty interesting. So it was a down year, but I think 2018, that they're trying to come out of the gate strong. I think it's a little mistake doing this many events in this short amount of time, because you kind of really thin out the cards and less of an impact. But what are you hoping for when we hit we talk a year from now? We'll talk before then, but if we were talking a year from now, looking back at 2018, what do you hope to have seen in the year? What do you hope to have come away with the year with?
I think for 2018, the biggest story I'm focusing on looking at is the television deal. where are they going to stick with Fox? Are they going to spread it out between different places? Both Hulu and Facebook have recently signed live sport events vice presidents to, you know, go that way. You know, and Facebook's throwing a lot of money. But even though they didn't get the deal signed, they tried to sign a cricket deal worth $600 million. I'm not sure the specifics on how long that deal was. But there's places the UFC can go to get fairly lucrative deals. We'll see how that goes. Obviously, they want to stay on network TV and cable, but you still have premium cable potentially. That's going to be the most interesting story because that will drive the conversation moving forward. You know, we briefly talked about the unionization of fighters. They're not going to get a piece of that TV deal. If they had a union now, and they could have had a piece of that deal. So once they see the money from that deal, maybe that helps drive that conversation forward. So that TV deal is going to drive a lot of the conversation for 2018, 19, and beyond.
I would agree. It's going to be interesting. I hope we get some good fights. I hope we get some big cards, and I hope we get a lot of noble things happening. I think the sport's a lot fun. Sport is more fun when the stars are aligned and the stars are fighting. And I think with Rousey on her way to WWE and not coming back anytime soon. And you know, I hope the divisions kind of get back to the way that they were. But I think with the champion versus champion fights, I think there is zero chance of that happening. And you know what? As we're kind of going through this conversation, that I think in some of these divisions, it might actually be good because it would give a chance for contenders to rise up. And there's so many of these divisions that there is no ready-made contenders that, I think in a lot of ways, I think that some of the divisions really could use it. And, you know, guys are going to be pissed and girls are going to be pissed, but this is just the way it is when you don't have any clear-cut contenders to knock you on the door. So I hope that those challengers that really deserve it get the opportunity. But I think this is going to be a year when they can really hopefully try to figure some things out and hopefully not be in this position for 2019 and beyond. Before I let you go, want to give you a chance to promote social media, obviously where people can read you on Bleacher Report and any other stuff. The floor is yours.
Yeah, you can follow me at McCarterN, and that's pretty much all my social media. And sometimes I do the Bleacher Report Twitter account, Bleacher Report_MMA. You follow me there. I'll be, for this year coming up, I'll be the lead play-by-play person, so all of the big pay-per-views pop on over there.
Great stuff, and we look forward to reading you there and having you back on the show. And thanks so much. This has been a lot of fun. Nathan McCarter, thanks for joining Josh Jason's Punch-Up.
Thank you.
All right. Big thanks to all of you for hanging in. Big thanks to Nathan McCarter for hanging out for 90 minutes. That was a really fun show and one that I look forward to doing next year and one that will be a little bit earlier. But I appreciate you guys for listening. And it's crazy how much stuff happens in a year, right? It is absolutely nuts. And it shouldn't be because I say the same thing every year. We always say, oh, it's wild how many things happen. But 2017 was batshit crazy for a lot of reasons. And 2018 is, and this is just in our little sphere of MMA and pro wrestling and even boxing, right? I mean, just think of all the other stuff that was happening out in the world. But, like, 2018 is already crazy enough. Ronda Rousey officially going to WWE, something we had known about for, obviously, a long time, but finally happening, what that's going to mean, and, you know, all types of UFC drama already, a bunch of shows, a lot of shows that don't really matter. You know, a lot of guys that were kind of waiting to see what their next moves are going to be. Cody Garbrandt comes to mind. Kevin Lee, we talked about on the show. Conor McGregor, when he's going to fight again, but I'm just going to put him in a different category. There's so many guys in these top tens that let's get active. Let's get going. Colby Covington, when's he going to fight? Darren Till, you know, we're going to get some movement here. And I don't know what's going to happen if these guys are just, they're happy with the money that they have and they don't have to fight in certain positions and put themselves in risky positions. But that's one thing I hope kind of rectifies itself this year as we're kind of going towards this champion versus champion climate. And obviously DC versus Stipe Miocic, that fight was made and I'll say a couple words because I have not talked to you all since UFC 220 in Boston. That was a really fun show. Crowd was hot from start to finish. That was, it was really fun. The crowd really was behind, obviously, the local guys, but DC and Stipe, man, they really, you know, the city gets a a bum rap for being racist in a lot of ways. And it's really unfortunate. It's something we've been kind of battling here in this region forever. Really unfair statement, but you know, DC, a black man came in here and was the king, man. He was the king of the night, and people just absolutely loved him. And it was really cool to see his, obviously the press conference afterwards is very impressive. And Stipe Miocic, just the everyman, a guy kind of associates with the normal guy. And that hasn't unfortunately translated over to the big stage and pay-per-view buys and all that. But I have some theories behind that I want to share with you guys at some point. But DC versus Stipe, they put themselves in position that they're going to square off coming up this summer. They're going to coach tough. Why that show still exists is just is beyond me. But, you know, we'll kind of push that off to the side as well. But these two guys are going to do battle. We're going to see if you really think about it, this is crazy. We're going to see potentially champion versus champion with Demetrius Johnson and TJ Dillashaw, with Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic. We could see one with, as I mentioned, Uranian Jacek and probably Nico Montano, depending if Joanna champion, ex-champion wins coming up in February. We could see, what is the other one? Amanda Nunes versus Cyborg, Justino. And it is amazing just that now we're just in this run of champion versus champion. And there's, you know, it's like you want to say, well, there's contender A, B, and C. In a lot of cases, there really isn't. I would have loved to see, and I still want to see, DC versus Gus 2. I don't really understand when Cormier this past Monday on Ariel Helwani's show said, you know, Gus lost his chance. He should have spoken up. I mean, he spoke up pretty big with that last performance he had after coming back. And I think that fight would be really great. The first one was fantastic. If you had not seen that fight, I don't know why you're listening to this show. Go watch it right now. The show, that fight was awesome. So we're going to have a lot of champion versus champion fights. And the sport continues to be made in Endeavor's eyes and their perspective and how they want things to go. And they want stars and they want big money and they don't really seem to care about a lot of these other shows that just kind of happen to exist. And the TV deal is going to be huge and kind of seeing how that position. I'm less interested. I'm interested to see where they're going to go. I ultimately think it's going to be Fox, but how many shows are included in the deal? I hope it's less. I hope that they learn their lesson. I don't think they will. I think it's going to be just as many as before. And that the fortune, I think, hurts the cards. If you pack some of these shows together and you cut a lot of just the crap out, these are some fun main card fights. You know, if you had a Machida Anders, Brunson Souza, and Stevens and Choi, you know, if you kind of put some of these fights together, granted, some of these are 5-round fights, whatever, but if you put some of these and kind of packed them in and made a nice 7-8 fight show, I mean, that's, or a couple of them, that's fun. But every single week it's tough. You know, we're doing our weekly kind of questions columns for the website. And it's a struggle sometimes being like, okay, what's supposed to be interesting about this show? And it's difficult sometimes outside the main event. And even sometimes the main event's not that interesting. So, you know, let's just all hope for a big 2018 and, you know, we'll keep the show going, keep the train going, keep the interest going and all the good stuff. So I appreciate all you guys for listening. My voice is completely toast. And, as always, you have a ton of choices in your podcasting day. And the fact you spent even a little bit of time with me, means a lot. So, for all of us on the site, thank you for stopping by. Thank you to Nathan McCarter for having me hanging in for 90 minutes. Thanks to everyone in the world. My voice is done. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. This has been the year 2017, year in review. Until next time, which could be in a couple days, insert catchphrase here.